At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Well, should we get into it, man?
Yeah, we shall.
Episode number one, I don't know.
Number one.
We've done, yeah, number one of the new format.
The State of the
Operation.
Union.
The State of the Union podcast, where basically it's just Clem and I. We're going to hoe into some wine. We're going to talk to Marcus pretty shortly, I think.
Why, if he answers.
He didn't answer the test call to make sure he was up. So he's failed the first hurdle.
But
seeing if he can sort of tidy it up at the apex and recover it for the second. But
sort of missed his breaking point, per se.
Yeah, no, exactly. But so Marcus isn't with us, but he will be with us momentarily, we hope, if he sorts his shit out, which is fairly standard for us.
And to be fair, so we hope he'll be with us, obviously, for this pod via the
wonders of
satellite
technology.
Communications, yeah. And the internet, the interweb, per se.
We haven't quite figured out everything yet, but we're getting
there.
The light's
gone
off. We're getting there.
And we've got quite an audience.
And literally, as I say, we haven't quite figured it out.
No, we haven't quite figured out anything at the moment.
But mate, something's never changed. We're going to do some wine.
Yes.
I'll get you to hold that if I can. The wine glasses that
you
provided.
So I was tasked, actually, before the start of the day, to come up with a solid wine bottle. And due to my lack of knowledge or understanding or awareness, I left the bottle at home.
I'd just go with awareness, actually. Yeah. I think you understood and you
I understood
were,
the
know,
assignment.
Yeah.
I just didn't quite listen to it.
Yeah.
And so I've gone ahead with a Yellowtail Merlot.
Yeah, I think it's a Merlot because this is straight out of Australia.
Yeah. No, it's a Merlot.
And are you all right, stability wise, for me to pour on that back cup
Hold
there?
Hold on, let me just sort of.
Oh.
So we're going to have to...
It's got a sort of a real Ribena colour to it.
I don't know if that's a good thing.
Suspect it could actually be...
Hey, Frank, come here.
...some proportion Ribena.
Here's your drink. Cheers, boy.
So this is a 2000 and...
Something.
22, so very young.
Very young. Full of tannins.
Merlot. I think it's probably from Adelaide.
Oh, you've recovered your Team New Zealand.
Yeah, I found it kicking around your house. So,
oh, did
yeah,
you?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, good on
it.
You.
Yeah, so anyway, you've given us tasting notes before on the show when it's in a glass. Now, is there anything you do differently in the tasting process when it's in unrecyclable plastic?
Not really.
Same process?
Sort of same process. Yeah. You shuffle it about a little bit, give it a bit of
Are you as concerned about the colour as I am?
It does very... It does
Maybe,
look very
again,
pink.
We're missing a wine glass. I don't know.
It's got a.
Ooh.
That is a strong.
It's
nose.
Got a bouquet.
It's got a
bouquet. That thing. Holy shit!
I tell you what, that has got me slightly worried.
Well, it's got me. I know that they sponsor the Australian Open. It's got me worried for the attendees of the Australian Open. To be perfectly honest, the alcohol content in this must be astronomical.
13.5%, surprisingly low, but to be getting a bit of an.
Should we stop? Should we stop stalling and actually give it a go?
Yeah.
It's pretty sweet. I don't know if I actually got enough.
So we've got a plane going on in the background there to sort of add to the sort of ambiance.
Yeah. It's a classy affair, this feels like. It really does.
Well, I think I'm going to put my drink down.
It's a firm two from me.
It's not a good wine. But
Could you put your finger on a note there? Like,
I just thought it tasted like paint.
Paint thinners.
It's thinner.
It's not sat well either. Actually, it's still. You know when you do a shot of tequila and it's just kind of.
It just
right
sits
there.
Here. Yeah, it's kind of
right
the same.
There. It's right there. So anyways, no good on the Aussie wine.
No.
But we'll, should we get into some F2 chat?
Let's get into some topics.
Mate, we've just had the Aussie Grand Prix.
Yep.
We'll do a bit of F1 chat later, but we'll cover the F2 stuff. It was quite a weird one, as it usually is in Melbourne. A little bit of a changing of the guard as to who was quick. But you still had Maloney there.
Yeah.
And Hauger was still fast, although he kind of shat the bed at the end there a little bit.
Yeah, well, you see, the thing is, it's been a bit of a weird season for me in the old Formula 2 front, because the geezers you expect to be at the front.
Your Behrmanns,
your Martins, sort of the second-year drivers, apart from Maloney. They've not...
It's been odd.
It's been very odd.
The Campos have been fast early doors again.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
And Carlin as well, or the Roddins.
The Rodens. Yeah, they ditched the Carlin brand name.
Yeah.
Curious decision, but anyway.
I think it had something to do with...
I think it had a lot to do with a lot of things, but we won't digress too heavily into that.
Yes, we won't digress too heavily.
So they have come out the gate well. The Roden team from New Zealand, with the boy from Barbados.
Indeed.
So he's leading the championship only by a whisker now, or
I think he's got a bit of a gap still.
The Dennis was looking like closing it pretty significantly, but then I had that shunt at the end of
not the best
the feature. Popular corner to crash on.
He's done an Alex Albon and a George Russell.
Yeah.
Technically that's F1 material.
Yeah. No, absolutely. He's done a solid job in finding a good place to park it. And an exciting race, actually, in Australia as well.
No, definitely. I think the Australian Grand Prix is always a bit of an event. The fans are crazy, which you love.
There's a lot of
awesome
great
fans.
Great fans in Australia.
And, put it this way, watching it on telly, as difficult it was to wake up early,
that was
early doors.
That was brutal.
I was sad.
Yeah. Just to wake up.
No, I was sad just not to be there, you know.
Yeah, no,
it's a bit of an experience.
Seeing Max Futrell's stories.
Yeah,
it did hurt. I was getting jealous because he wasn't there last year, and I was giving him heaps of shit for it.
And now this year it's the turns table.
Hey,
the shoe is on the other foot.
Maloney's pretty much just come out the gate and impressed everybody. Hauger still looks like he's got heaps of pace, but I think it could be a bit of a showdown between those two throughout the rest of the year with, Victor's going to make a big old comeback.
Well, I think the thing is, the most surprising statistic that you can take away from this year is that up until round three, obviously in Australia,
I'm going to be brave,
Victor hadn't scored a point.
Yeah.
Which, to be honest, coming into that championship, second year, experience, the pace...
I think you and I and pretty much everyone else thought it was going to be, right, Behrmann, Martins, this is going to be Hamilton versus Verstappen.
All over again.
All year.
Formula 2.
No siree, Bob. It's been all Maloney. It's been the Maloney show.
It has been. Holy Maloney. Who actually made his commentary debut last weekend in Formula E.
Did he?
Yes.
Good on him.
Yeah, no, he sort of became a sort of a weekend pundit there in Japan.
How'd he go?
He did all right, actually. I thought we'd get him on Screaming Meals at some point.
Yeah, didn't drop any C's. He wasn't effing and jeffing.
No, he wasn't an effing and jeffing. He was pretty standy. He may have to take a couple of pointers from us.
Yeah, I think he
due to our sort of expanded experience on the subject of commentating race cars.
Yeah, no,
but,
he's doing yeah,
no, well, he did a solid job.
Well, on track and off track, same Maloney, coming in hot. Bit of F1.
Oh, well, I think there's still plenty to talk about the
F2. Well,
there is
a lot we talk about the F2. I mean, to be fair, Behrmann should have potentially had a right old haul of points in Saudi Arabia.
But chose not to show up.
With our feet.
Is this quite...
Is that in shot? Very odd. So we had Behrmann. Did he keep those 4 points, do you know?
No.
Because you withdraw the car, you
withdraw
the pole.
Car, you withdraw the whole weekend.
That's a fucker, isn't it? So he's still pointless.
Is he?
I think he might be.
Well,
I could be wrong. Happy to be wrong, but I think Behrmann may well be pointless.
Put it this way. The young man from Britain decided not to show up in Saudi, which for me was a real sort of a big power move.
Yeah.
To turn up, you know, do pole position and say, you know what?
Got a better offer. Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry, mate. Yeah, yeah, see you later. Yeah. But he did a good job. he done himself proud in the old Formula One front.
Yeah.
I've heard some rumblings actually in the background regarding some little contract discussions already.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard the same ones.
Quite recently, actually.
Interesting.
But nothing too much I want to talk about.
All right. Okay. We'll move on then.
I could get into trouble.
Okay. Oh, well, there you go. You must know more than I. Outside of Behrman's involvement, so we're doing the weird foot thing again. Outside of Behrman's involvement in F1,
it's not really much happened, really.
No, we had the excitement there, and then Sainz kind of rained on his parade in Australia because absolutely jumped in the car, brought it home to a P7, only one practice session, absolutely take nothing away from that. But then the comeback from Sainz was pretty shit hot.
It's spectacular.
Yeah.
I mean,
no appendix, no appendix. Problem.
Well, technically, you could argue that the sort of appendix situation was a slight upgrade for himself and for the car.
Weight trimming. I don't know why they don't all have to do it. Like, the teams should be probably on their case going, like, are you serious? You still have an appendix.
It's 200 solid grams.
They should all be running, like, this sort of Voldemort trim.
Yeah.
Facial hair, no pubes, no appendix, and just outright pace.
Well,
to be honest, Linus Lundqvist.
How would you know?
Well, he's running that trim, but if he's, I might ask him. Is he running an appendix? Because that might be what he needs.
Oh. Well, it is definitely weight saving in that front. I mean, technically, I'd like to know what hair weighs.
Yeah. Well, mate, we could shave all of yours off and weigh it.
Nah. See, I fancy my hair a bit too much. No, but
like Jeremy Clarkson has brought 2 points up quite recently that I think are worth bringing up. And actually, one of them wasn't recent. It was in 2006. He said, why is Jenson Button allowed to have a beard? Like, well, to be fair, you would think with F1 drivers. Clem just dropped his phone and cracked his screen, by the way, which is...
Shocker.
So it's taken away from my point about Jeremy Clarkson.
Yeah, somewhat. Go on.
But no, he said to Lewis Hamilton in their interview, why is Jenson Button allowed a beard? It's all about weight. And it's actually, to be fair, the fact that they haven't been allowed to paint the wagons this year because of weight saving.
You may as well just shave your head.
That'd be on the drivers.
Now, what would you say to an all-out baldy grid?
I think it's a question, mate, of commitment. And I think it's a question of, like many things on this show, passion.
Yeah.
Take George Russell... Lewis Hamilton, if you take maybe even somewhat this year, Oscar Piastri, Lando Norris, it's how much does the young kid want it? If we're not seeing a full 20 driver grid of completely just bald individuals, I think you've got to start questioning commitment to the cause because that's what sport's about, mate. It's about what are you going to do to beat the other guy? Are you going to do that next thing, you know, go to that next level to do the necessary tasks to get the win?
Yeah, no.
Where do you stand on that?
To be honest, I agree in the sense that I think that, I recently read an inspiring book on none other than Ayrton Senna, Ayrton, because that's how you should pronounce it, not Ayrton.
You would know.
But quite an inspirational fella. Now, I don't know if you're too familiar with his sort of pedigree and workings in the Formula One world.
Goes right, eh?
He's not bad. But he was one dedicated fella.
Mm.
Now, if you told him to shave his head for a couple of tents, he would.
You reckon he would?
100%. Now, you swap that situation around and you ask a sort of a Lando Norris.
Mm.
I don't know if he would.
I think Lando, he'd do the buzz cut.
Oh, he'd
I think
go
he'd
buzz
run
cut.
The buzz cut. I think he's sort of.
Because he could rock it.
I think he's almost turning into our generation's David Beckham. Different sport, but you know what I mean? Like, he's kind of got that same heat from the British public. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no.
And so I think he could start getting really funky with his haircuts.
He could go platinum.
He could go platinum. I'm starting to go platinum.
I've thought about going platinum this year, and I'm still thinking about it.
Plenty
the only
time,
problem
mate.
With that is I had a quick chat with my local barber there. Before, obviously, I cheated on him and got my hair cut in Kensington. But, I had a chat with my local barbie, and he told me that, unfortunately, due to how dark my hair was...
Yeah, it's never going grey.
No, not that it's never going grey. If I want to go platinum, there's a slight possibility that the bleach may turn me sort of Sainsbury's orange.
Jean-Gerre, yeah.
Now, see, I think the Platinum look would look good, but I'm not too sure with a Sainsbury's Orange.
The risk reward for you of a Sainsbury's Orange being the worst case and Platinum being the best case, I think you're best just keeping it au naturel.
Au naturel, yeah. But now going back to your point on Lando Norris, yeah, no, Dave definitely sort of got that David Beckham look about him.
And it's sort of aura as well.
Yeah.
David Beckham like aura.
No, definitely.
All he needs is a Spice Girl now.
But, well, quite true. I've heard there may be one that comes available.
I don't even know what you're talking about, but it's funny. Right, should we move into some IndyCar? Should we give Marcus Armstrong, founder of the show, a quick buzz? See if he answers your calls. Didn't answer
well, mine. Let's give that a crack and go. No promises on that from that point of view.
If he doesn't answer the phone, he runs the risk of us talking about him, which he certainly doesn't want.
No. Now, let me find him on the phone there. God, this is difficult. The old interweb. Quite a difficult beast to manage. Let's see if the young man from Kiwi Land is going to answer us, boys. I've got it recorded on there. It's not looking good.
No, it's not looking great.
James, you're looking hot.
Thanks, mate.
No. Great. Well, this has been somewhat of a letdown, but expected.
So, I don't think... What percentage of the listenership do you think was expecting that phone call to be answered?
Probably zero.
I'd say there was probably an optimistic 2%.
2%. Yeah.
Well, we have had we've had 1.5 rounds of IndyCar.
Yeah.
St. Pete, I mean, I'll talk on a Scrutiny Mills perspective as the CEO. Shit show.
No good for...
I don't think I can digress into any potential reasoning, but Mark's ended up on the wall. Then we had the heat race thing that was for money, the $1 million challenge.
Oh yeah, the thermal.
That was a bit weird.
Well, I didn't really understand it. No.
Okay.
I won't be. I'll be 100% honest with you. I didn't watch it.
Okay. Well, I watched it.
I didn't understand the concept.
Right.
Heat. No heat.
We also didn't. I think basically the engineers out-engineered the race organizers. So essentially, what happened was you had two. You know how they qualify an IndyCar?
No.
Okay.
Yes. I do.
Group knockout. It was like that, but for races. So they had a heat race one, heat race two, different fields, split field, and then it was the top six goes through from each, similar to the qualifying.
Yeah.
Then you had your top six. So MA made the six, Grouse. So he's in the fast 12. What would in qualifying be a fast 12? And then, but that was actually a race that was 20 laps.
Yeah.
But with a half time. So it was really on the 10 laps with essentially a 10 lap pre-grid, essentially.
Okay.
Where people started just looking after tyres and playing, you know, the games that you'd expect racing drivers and engineers to start playing. So then you had this 10 lap procession in the middle of the fast 12, which really was just an exhibition for nothing.
Yeah.
Then you got them going at it for 10 laps after the halftime break where they've kept the same tyres on and refueled up.
I'm getting a headache.
It was a lot for quite a confusing, it was very odd. It was very odd.
But below
to be honest, look, the other alternative was have a 6-week break after round one.
Yeah, which
terrible.
I would have been happy with.
As a you need to take your driver's hat off.
Yeah, well,
as a fan, that's shit house. Imagine if the Premier League fired up and then they're like, right, 5 weeks to the next one. See you there.
Grouse.
Okay, well, yeah, but that's easy for us because we've got a lot to do. But can you just, for the sake of the conversation, stop being a pain in the ass?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, so six-week grap isn't really an option. So I appreciate they gave us some racing. I don't know why they had to give the drivers so much money.
For a six-lap race.
Because as some, you know, again, as somebody who takes the stance of, fuck the drivers. I'm like, give the money to charity or something. It was a weird vibe, and I don't mean to bag on IndyCar, because I love IndyCar more than most other race series on the planet, but
yeah.
there was kind of, because it was at Thermal, which is like a country club for race car enthusiasts, which is basically a country club for even richer people than who are already at country clubs, let's be honest. It's a private racetrack, not a golf course. So there's a lot of this, like, hey, look how rich we are. And this is a private club, remember? You plebs can't come here. There was a lot of that in the coverage, and it felt real insulting. I don't know.
Yeah.
Let us know in the comments if you felt the same. But I just felt like Lee Diffie was just calling me a poor bastard the entire time.
See, the thing is, I didn't even watch it, so I didn't even know what it looks like.
No, well, there you go.
But
Marcus did all right. I mean, he won himself 50 grand.
Now,
pre-tax.
Pre-tax.
So he lives in the state of Indiana.
Indeed.
Is there state taxes in Indiana?
Yeah, of course there is.
So it's 20% comes out straight away, right? That's your federal. All right, let's just say that I'm going to round up. Sorry to the
James,
citizens.
I think in order to streamline this, put it this way.
He's walked home with about 5 grand.
I was going to go as low as 500.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Uncle Sam's definitely had something to say about that 50 grand check.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so it was $1 million race, to summarize, to wrap up.
Yeah.
$1 million race. The winner gets 500 grand.
Oh, I thought you got a million.
No. It was $1 million purse. If you're Pelo, you're going in. You've won the $1 million race. We'll give you 500 grand.
All right. Grouse.
Half's probably going to chip. Then you've got, okay, so that's, then you're left with 250. Then you've got probably, 40% in Alex's bracket. 40% is going to Uncle Sam. So then you're down to about, okay, generously 150K. Then you've got your state taxes, let's say another 10%. So you're back down to from 150K.
120.
So Pelo's walking in the door from winning the $1 million race at Thermal into Indianapolis with about 100 grand in his back pocket.
Now, you may say it's pretty poor. It's still pretty good to
it's
walk
still
in
a good
with 100 grand. You know, I'd happily take it. But, definitely Uncle Sam's got a lot to do with the old purses out there.
Yeah, no, for sure. So no Marcus this week. So that's all the IndyCar chat that we'll give you. We'll see you probably next time in Long Beach. So that's where the next podcast is going to come from.
Is it?
Yeah. No, Barcelona's where. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, Barcelona.
Barcelona's where we'll get next week from. I've just got a couple of headlines I want to throw at you. Lawrence Stroll's put his credit card on the table and said to Adrian Newey, have fun, kiddo. What do you reckon's going to happen?
What would you reckon is going to happen?
I think it's going to stay at Red Bull.
See, I've heard that he's going to Ferrari.
Well, because Fred made a move. Fred basically slid into his DMs a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
That was reported. And then now, but I mean, there's sliding into your DMs and there's going, open checkbook, what do you want?
See, the thing I believe is that looking at Lewis Hamilton's salary, I believe the Ferrari checkbook is also quite significant in the sense that they can approach Lewis Hamilton with a $100 million check. I'm pretty sure they can satisfy Adrian Newey's needs.
But here's the thing, though. I don't trust that Lawrence won't hear $100 million. Fine, $200.
I see.
Because I've heard a couple of stories about Lawrence and the sphere from outside the racetrack.
Yeah.
And I know that's kind of how he operates.
Well, maybe so, but I still believe that...
How do you think he'll want so?
I still believe... I reckon Adrian wants a chance to work with Lewis. I think that's the main thing that he can get from being at Ferrari.
That's interesting insight from you, actually. Which we don't... Is that allowed on the podcast?
What sense?
It's actually quite a good point you've brought up. I'm trying to give you a compliment.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
No, I actually believe that, obviously, he's worked with plenty of amazing drivers over his career. The likes of Senna, the likes of, obviously, Vettel. He didn't work with Schumacher, but he had the chance to work with many, many good drivers, also Mika Hakkinen, those guys. And he's been at Red Bull a while.
Yep.
He's had the chance to work with Max Verstappen. But are you going to turn down the chance to work with a seven-time world champion?
Both goats.
Yeah.
Yeah, a collection of goats.
Collection of goats in the garage.
If he goes to Ferrari, is he dubbed the goat farmer?
He could be, yeah,
I think
indeed. Yeah,
we just refer to Newey as the goat farmer. Because that was the other thing I was going to bring out. That it seamlessly brings on. I think Jeremy Clarkson needs to sign up some kind of agency deal, whatever happens. Because he brought up pretty much... shed a light on it round one of the year in Bahrain when Brundle goes to him, who's your money on? He goes, Adrian Newey.
Well, yeah, no, I think that
I think it was a good point that a drunk farmer on the grid in Bahrain brought up.
Well, a little known fact is they actually went to school together and were in the same class. And both the only two lads expelled from their year group, with 1 year to go before their O-levels at the time.
Oh, good on them.
As you can see, school's very useful, I think, knowing full well that the two lads that got expelled, one of them is a multi-millionaire TV presenter and the other one is a arguably the greatest
engineer of all time,
which I think kind of puts everything into perspective.
Yeah, so if school's going a bit shit,
don't you worry.
Don't stress.
Yeah,
it's cool.
It's all right. But they've been very, very good friends for a very long period of time.
Yeah.
And I actually think that, surprisingly, I believe that Jeremy Clarkson would make a great team manager.
Oh, it'd be, I mean, Netflix have been lining up around the block.
Well, here's an idea. I mean, there is definitely an idea in there. I mean, the guy's literally turned his farm around. He hasn't made a profit yet, but I think only a couple of £100.
So here's an idea. Get Andretti to hire him. Get him to rock up and run Andretti. You'd have the sort of mix of culture. You'd have the British-American thing. Yeah. You'd have a media opportunity, which keeps Formula One happy to make some more money.
Oh, for sure.
Great entertainment value. Jeremy Clarkson as a team principal.
Imagine him on the pit wall.
Oh, imagine him on the radio. Oh.
The radio messages would be through the roof. Hammond!
He'd just be bullying everyone, especially Mike Crack. He'd go after Mike Crack like an absolute hound.
Why?
Mate, come on.
Mike Crack?
he'd just be there bullying everyone. Oh, I'm here.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
But,
So there you go. For the board of Andretti Autosport.
If you're listening to this, hire Jeremy Clarkson as your CEO.
Then Liberty Media might say yes. Bear in mind, they're a media organisation, not a racing organisation. And on that bombshell, mate, should we wrap it up? I mean, I don't think I had any other headlines I wanted to run past you.
No, I'm pretty cold. It's a cold...
It's chilly. Oh,
I look at Frankie, he's sort of grabbing hold.
Sorry, Frank, just 2 seconds back. One thing I do just want to bring up. There's media reports out there that Liam Lawson is set to replace Daniel Ricciardo in two races if Ricciardo can't pull his finger.
Yeah.
Rumors,
what's my take?
Rumors were started by the NZ Herald, so take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
But I think, and I think there's actually some brain thoughts gone into this, AlphaTauri or Red Bull or whoever makes the decision would have been looking quite closely at the metric over the weekend at the Australian Grand Prix of how much merch did Daniel sell compared to Oscar. Because there was a lot of orange in that crowd. I didn't see a lot of blue.
True.
So if you're at the marketing team at RB, Cash App, Bitcoin,
Visa, something,
what have
yeah.
you, are you then going, aha, the tide is turning to the young Australian. No one gives a shit about this one anymore. I wonder if the same thing's going to happen with the young Kiwi.
See, for me, it's not even a case of marketing. We know it's important in Formula One,
mm-hmm.
but looking back at last year and generally the history of Red Bull, they've been quite consistent in the sense that if you're a good driver, you'll get promoted, and if you don't perform, you're out.
Yeah.
Now, I like that consistency, and sometimes, you know, you had instances where Alex Albon actually stayed at Red Bull for a couple of seasons, even though he
Maybe
wasn't
too
performing.
Long. Yep.
But I'm a big fan of Nick De Vries.
Mm-hmm. Same.
And he was out after 10 rounds.
Yeah.
If Ricciardo doesn't perform, he should be out after 10 rounds.
Yeah.
Consistency.
Yeah. No, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. An HR lawyer would have something to say about it.
Yeah.
You know, same treatment, you know, all that kind of shit. So.
Exactly.
Hey, time will tell. And Frank, we're going to get you inside now, mate. So that's another episode. Well, that's another episode of the new version of Screaming Meals.
Without Marcus.
It's a taster. It's a sort of an amuse-bouche, if you will.
Yeah, an amuse-bouche, yes.
And you're going to see us at a few more kind of curious locations around the world throughout the rest of the year. So
there you go.